Hey everyone, welcome to the Life in Gear podcast, where truth leads to joy and adventure. I'm your host, Justin Stewart, and I'm here with Kevin.
Hey!
He's the lead pastor at Canvas Church, and honestly, Kevin, this show is just about talking through a lot of different ways to help us be better people.
Come on, there it is. That's what we want to be.
Yeah, we got a spicy topic we're going to talk about today, but before we get to that, I got to ask you, what's been going on? How's life?
Well, I got to ask you a question. How do you define spicy? Because everybody's interpreting spicy differently. Some are like, are they talking about sex? What are they talking about?
We don't know. We'll find out in a second. Oh,
you piqued my interest, and I know what I'm talking about. It's been a good season. As we're getting ready to jump in here into the fall, but I got to tell you, I feel like I've eaten this summer like a bear getting ready for hibernation. And I don't know what it is. You know how people, they had the COVID 30, like when we were shut down, people put on 30 pounds staying at home.
It's like the freshman 30?
Yeah, I found
that's a thing. I didn't know that was a thing.
You know, here at the church that I pastor at, we call it Canvas 30. People who join work here gain, you would know that.
Mine was the Canvas 15-ish.
Well, that's when you first started. But it's been a good season, though.
That's fun. I have a really important question. I've been meaning to ask this question for a while.
Ask away.
Are you still a handyman? I mean, we talked about it in the first episode, but I never see anything on social media. Like, you and I never talk about it. I mean, every now and then you talk about tools.
But I posted yesterday.
Oh, man.
A tool. Handyman has turned into tool fetish since you used the word spicy. Is that appropriate?
That's not appropriate.
Is that bad?
It's okay.
I'm red.
Andy and Tanya are trying to click mute over here.
I love buying tools.
Yes.
And I bought a tool yesterday. I walked through the Harbor Freight store, and I'm really big into Hercules tools.
Oh, that's right. You're into the, no one knows the brand. Nobody
knows the brand. But I've done a lot of projects around the house, but there's several that I've put off that I'm supposed to be doing this fall, and it's come in time.
Yeah.
Like drywall, certain towel rods have been pulled off the out of the wall, and I have to do that kind of work, and I'm not really looking forward to that, but it's time, because I told my wife this year I would fix all of those, and I put it off, but now I have all the tools that I can't put it off.
So it's October, right?
Yeah.
And so you're running out of time.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up.
And you're working on your doctorate, too. So your
life is full.
And you got a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
So let's just be honest. Are you going to get it all done?
Basically, I have 9 Fridays left, because Friday is my day.
Yeah, yeah.
And 3 of them I will go jeeping.
Okay.
So that means 6 Fridays.
Yeah.
Lots of time.
I'm going to be honest with you right now. I'm impressed that you know your schedule that well through the end of the year. That's very good.
Well, if I don't have it planned out, my life will spin out of control. Yeah. And Tanya, who helps put this whole thing together, makes sure that my calendar is appropriately functioning.
And not spicy.
Not spicy.
Hey, all right, let's get into what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about the lost art of civil discourse. And Kevin, I'm going to shoot you straight right now on
this. Come on.
I don't want to talk about this subject.
Well, it
usually I'm like the hype guy. I'm so excited about it. I don't want to talk about this. This is because I know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, even through this conversation, I'm going to have to make changes in my life.
Me too. I just shared this with our whole staff, this topic of how to have a healthy civil discourse with people you disagree with. And my son was sitting in the audience. I'm teaching this, I'm like going, dude, I fail here and I fail here. And he's looking at me going, you don't do this all the time.
Yeah.
And I think one of the realities is people that we have the hardest time having civil discourse with is our family.
Yeah.
Why do we treat the ones that we're closest to the worst?
Yeah.
They should get our best. And so, but anyways, that's just warming us up to this spicy topic of civil discourse.
All right. Well, let's just dive into it. I'm ready to go. From what I understand, you got a ton of stuff to hit. So let's get into it.
Yeah. Well, I think, civil discourse is a lost art. We see it on TV. Like, I remember growing up on CNN, there was a TV show called Crossfire.
Oh, yeah.
And do you remember that?
Well, I was too young, but I remember my parents watching.
Yeah, and they would it would be two people on different sides of the topic,
yeah.
And they would argue, but they would have great discourse. In fact, there's another show that came out of that that was sort of its competitor for all of the Fox News watchers out here called
Hannity and Combs.
Hannity and Combs.
Oh, I nailed it.
That's right. And Hannity was one side of the issue, and Combs was the Democrat, and they would go at each other, but it was they were friends, and they would have they would model wonderful discourse where you could wrestle with the topics. We've lost that art. In fact, you don't see those shows on TV that much anymore. It's now more single commentators and of what they're talking about.
And then they what they do is, and this is both sides of the table, so this isn't just one or the other, but then what they do is they bring someone else that doesn't agree with them, and then they just put them down.
They interrupt them. They have their own agendas.
Tell them how wrong they are.
And here's the reality. That is the model of how conversations are supposed to happen. Because unfortunately, in our society, no matter if we like this or not, what we watch on TV, we emulate in our life.
Yeah, it's true.
And you can watch the decline of discourse based on cable news TV.
Wow. That's actually that's a weird thought to think about, actually. But you do see that influence, don't you? So that's politics and stuff. What other things do we see that in, though?
Well, I think you see it in sports. We can always get into great arguments over sports, and that can sometimes even that has cost friendships and religion. I mean, people like to get into arguments over religion and all that kind of stuff. I don't just politics is a huge one because we have seen through COVID and even should I be vaccinated or should I not be vaccinated or what is a vaccination, and that we've seen that rip up families apart. I've had people, numerous people in my office, really weeping that over a disagreement over vaccinations that's ripped the family apart. And it hurts your heart because we don't know how to have civil discourse.
So really, basically, civil discourse is the ability to disagree in a civilized way, is what you're saying.
Where, you know what? There's let me give you three assumptions.
Okay.
Just right off the top of when I go into a civil discourse conversation. Like let's say you and I are gonna sit down and we're gonna debate about something. We're gonna talk about music, or we're gonna talk about politics, or we're gonna talk about whatever. Yeah. There's three assumptions that when I sit down with somebody that's in my mind. Not at the beginning, but the entire time I'm having this conversation.
Okay.
And here they are. Number one is we're going to be friends at the end of this, or we're going to be family at the end of this, no matter what.
Yeah.
That no matter what we talk about, where our relationship is right now, it's going to be better because we've had this conversation, and I have to assume that and work for it. I think the other thing is, and this might be more mental, but I'm a pretty huggy person. We will start with a hug, and we're going to end with a hug.
That's the teddy bear in
you. That's the teddy bear in me. I know not everybody's a hugger, but in my heart, that's what's going to be like.
Yeah.
I've taken a couple people out for dinner. There was one couple that wanted to meet with me and discuss some things that were going on in their life.
Okay.
And they wanted to ask my opinion from a biblical perspective on some stuff. And I said, well, here's the deal. I will not have this conversation with you if you won't hug me at the beginning. And you won't hug me at the end.
Yeah.
If you will do that, then we can have this conversation.
Did you have it?
And we had it. And we completely disagreed with each other as we were navigating this. But it was it was a beautiful conversation. And we loved each other even more at the end of the conversation, even though we disagreed.
That's cool.
And then let me lead you to that third assumption. So let me repeat. And the first one is we're going to be friends with family by the end, no matter what.
Yep.
We're going to hug at the beginning. We're going to hug at the end. And then I think the third one is let's understand the topics that we often discuss are not the end of the world. Mm. And yet we argue or we approach them like if you don't agree with this, it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
And it's not.
And I think that's what a lot of people do think is a lot of these topics that are being discussed because you see it more and more, especially politics. And since we're in this season of COVID and the pandemic and stuff, people think if whether it's one way or the other, if we don't change or if we do keep going this way, it is going to be the way that's going to change our whole entire world. It's going to change our societal functionality.
Good point. So they feel it. They feel like this could be the end of the world.
Yeah.
It's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
And I think we need to be able to back up and go, now, it doesn't mean it's not important.
Yeah, that's true.
It doesn't mean it's not critical to discuss it.
Yeah.
But what I have found is the end of the world is not happening, but the end of relationships is happening all the time.
That's good.
And I'm going to tell you, if it's going to be the end of the world, I want to be your friend at the end of the world, not your enemy at the end of the world.
That's good.
And my friendship with you is more important than the end of the world. Here's why. Because if friendships start breaking down, if families start breaking down, we've just brought in the end of the world.
Wow.
So, did I get passionate
that
and spicy?
Was passion right there. Well,
you said make it spicy, so I'm trying.
Okay, so I appreciate those assumptions, and I think, and I like what you say is we need to do that throughout the whole conversation.
Yeah.
Because it's, I can see how easily you can forget that as the conversation moves on. So how do we have civil discourse?
Well, I just got some random facts. So they're not like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah. It's more like 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. And I think the first one would be... In conversation, when you're having the civil discourse, avoid the personal attacks.
Mm.
Like, you are such an idiot. That would be considered a personal attack. Or you are so stupid to think that personal attack. Do you need more illustrations of personal attacks?
No, I appreciate that. I think it's easy to say that that's the quickest and easiest one to come to, probably.
You know, it is. We did a podcast on emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
And it's no surprise to me that emotional intelligence podcast came before the civil discourse podcast, because you have to have emotional intelligence. And and you don't tear people down to convince them of your thought. Mm. That's by tearing people down, they don't usually subscribe to what you're communicating.
Shocker.
So avoid those personal attacks. And too often we can be discussing something, a topic, or and when we disagree on it, then instead of attacking the issue or talking the issue, we take the low road. We take the emotional road, and we begin to attack each other. You got to avoid that. No personal attack. Address the ideas. This is how I say it. Address the ideas, not the person.
Okay.
So make sure that what you're talking about is the idea. Disagree with the idea, but don't disagree with the person.
What if it's the person's actions that you have to address or that you're addressing? Like what they do, like them as a person.
I think it's a different type of conversation.
Hypocritical or something like that.
Yeah, I think if I'm having that's a different kind of conversation. I don't know if that's if the conversation is personally about you, that's more of a confrontational conversation. That's going to be a little different. I'm going to approach that a little more differently.
Okay.
That's a podcast for another day. Okay. How do you speak life to a person when they're in error? I think there's a truth to that.
Yeah.
But when you just have a different view than I have a different view, and we're friends, more from a family standpoint, not a boss employee standpoint, but from a friends or family standpoint, there's the art of civil discourse.
Yeah, I get that.
I think, in fact, as we talk about avoid personal attacks or address the idea and not the person, here's the big shift, and I'm going to say it three different ways, and that is this. When you enter a conversation, listen to learn, not to talk.
Mm.
And that's hard to do, because often when we're disagreeing about something, I'm sitting here while you're talking about how great the Indianapolis Colts are. I'm sitting here waiting for an opportunity to tell you all of the things that I'm thinking about how horrific that they are.
Yeah.
And I'm not listening to learn from you.
Yeah.
And I think civil discourse is two people coming together to learn from each other.
Hmm.
So I have to listen to learn, not listen to talk.
Yeah.
Huge mental discipline to have. And then you have to listen to learn, not to convince. So I can't be arguing with you in my head while you're talking.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm just shooting you down. I'm not listening. It's listen to learn. And then the third one I have here is listen to learn because you care.
Oh.
In civil discourse, I have to listen because I really value what you're saying.
Yeah.
I may not agree with what you're saying, but you're a person and you have opinions.
Yeah.
And I want to listen to learn how your life experience and your life influences have shaped you to think the way you think. I probably can learn from that. And because I care for you as an individual, I want to care for you as an individual more than I care about my opinion.
Wow.
And so you listen to learn. You listen to learn not to talk. You listen to learn not to convince. You listen to learn because you care.
Yeah, honest. I mean, that just sounds hard to do.
It is. I have a story where me and my a close friend of mine, actually a family member, and I. they're so close. They're family, but they were actually family. And I had to keep reminding myself because we were really disagreeing with each other. Sure. And it was, you know, with your family, as I said at the beginning, it's harder to have emotional intelligence with family than anyone else. And I had to keep telling myself. So I would listen and not argue. I had to keep saying, I love this person. Mm. I love this person.
Yeah.
I love this person. That's going on in my head the entire time they're talking to keep myself in a position of listening because we were so passionate about the topic that we were talking about.
Yeah.
And honestly, you know, one of the greatest ways to show that you care about the person and so you're listening to learn because you care, watch your tone.
Oh, man.
Watch the tone what you speak. I know.
You just went dad mode on me.
Did I just go dad mode?
You just went dad mode on
like,
me.
Like, watch your tone. Yeah. Then I had dad tone.
And you looked at me like that, too. I felt like I was in trouble.
No. Such a great. It's so important.
Yeah.
It's so important to watch your tone because you're stating your opinion. You're passionate about it.
Yeah.
And in your tone, you can communicate, if you disagree with me, you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that can all be in tone.
Yeah.
How many times have we gotten an argument or something went sour and the person says, well, this is what you said. And they said, I never said that, but your tone said that.
Yeah, that's what they felt.
And yes, and your tone is louder than your words.
And we've already kind of touched on it, but for me, I find that specific point, I'm really good about watching my tone with like my coworkers and like all my people around me. My family, that thought goes right out the window instantly.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Is it so true? Because we're the most comfortable with them and we take for granted they're going to love us no matter what.
Mm.
And we just make it harder for them to love us.
Yeah.
And it is so true. And you know, one of the areas that I've had to grow in as my kids have become teenagers is you don't talk to a teenager the way you talk to a 2 and 4 and 5 and 6 year old. And I have 5 and 6 year olds and 2 year olds and 7 year olds still in my house. So same thing, I don't shift and I go to my teenager and I start talking to them like they're 2 years old. Do you think they appreciate that?
Definitely not.
And you know what it all is? Tone.
Tone.
It's all tone.
Yeah.
You just have to, watch that. And it's so hard. So here's one of the things that I've learned everything that I'm talking here, this just came to my mind. If you have teenagers, this is the way to talk to your teenagers. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Civil discourse is the tool
of
how to talk to your teenager.
That's a good point.
There's an application right there. But I think one of the things that I've had to learn in these kind of conversations is before stating my opinion, ask questions about their opinion.
Okay.
And here's what it means. If you listen to care, building off that theme, I'm listening because I care.
Yeah.
And I want to know your personal opinion and what shaped you. Well, the greatest way to compliment that and to express that I care, ask a question about your opinion. And not in an attacking way.
Mm.
Not in a way to catch you. Aha!
Yeah.
It's a go. Now, how did you land on that?
Yeah.
Or why is that such a powerful truth to you?
Yeah.
And it gives value to their opinion. And when you give value, and this isn't a manipulation tool.
Yeah.
It's a genuine heart tool. When you give value to their opinion, they want to know your opinion.
Really?
And you've just created the discussion, the discourse that it can go back and forth.
Do you have an example of that in your head?
I think, you know, I learned this in having conversations with my father. My father's a brilliant man, and he is smart. And his default setting is to find what's wrong with your argument and tell you about it.
Okay.
I see heads nodding around the table because I have picked that up from my father. But one of the things I realized in communicating with my dad is if I ask him about his opinion and then drive down on it a little bit more, you eventually get to the spot where he'll go, well, what do you think about this all? And I'm like, it is time to shine.
The evil plan has worked. So that's the, I think we talked about at one point, that's the why to the fifth power. kind of idea.
Yeah. Why do you believe that? Yeah. Why do you believe that? That's, yeah, systems thinking is what to the fifth power.
Okay.
And then why to the fifth power? This is another podcast someday. Yeah. Why to the fifth power is to understand the intent of why you do something. Yes. Yeah. So, but I think that's important. I think that's a great thing is if you ask a question genuinely, eventually they're going to ask you your opinion. And you, let's not lie, I want to share my opinion.
Sure.
And in a civil discourse, I completely want you to believe my opinion.
Right.
But that can't be the motivation behind it.
Yeah.
The motivation of a good conversation is that I know you better. I know your opinion better. And you know me better, and you know my opinion better. And here's an interesting side note.
Yeah.
Most of the time, people don't change their own opinion during the conversation.
Okay.
It happens hours, if not weeks after, if anybody's ever going to shift their thinking.
Yeah.
Because they're noodling on the conversation that you had in a safe way.
Yeah. That's cool.
And honestly, most of the time I've changed my opinion on something I thought didn't happen in the conversation, but it happened later when I continued to think about what they said and I thought, they're right.
Yeah.
Remember, I'm going into a conversation is not that you will believe everything that I believe.
Sure.
Having civil discourse is that I will learn from you and you can learn from me and together we will discover truth together. That's the key of
I mean, that's a complete mental shift because we're not there. Most of us are not there. We're not looking to learn from you at all. I'm looking to convince you of what's going on. That's what you're talking about. There's no civil discourse anymore. That's where we're at in our society, I feel like.
It is. And we can go find anything we want to find on the internet to back us up, and then that becomes our sources, and then we say we're researchers.
Right.
But we're not researchers. We're just taking what everybody else read and copied it and pasted it into their own. Let me do this. Let's go this direction. Let me give you some things of how to say what you want to say.
Okay.
So we've been listening. We've been listening. Listening with open hearts. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was like, when do I get to talk in this discourse thing?
Exactly. So it's your turn to talk. But I think it's primarily we start by listening.
Yeah.
Start by wondering. Yeah. Start by having a heart of curiosity to understand why does this person think this way and how did they land on this and what can I learn from their journey to help give me more insight? And now, this is where it gets spicy. It's my turn to say something. It's my turn to talk.
Yeah.
State your thoughts. Not as a truth, but as an opinion. This is a shift because we often talk in absolute truth statements.
Yep.
And here's what's tough about that. The minute I say something as an absolute truth, you either have to accept it or you're wrong. Mm. There's no place to discuss it.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know, we live in a world where the culture has eliminated absolute truth. I'm a believer in Jesus, so I believe in absolute truth.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean everything is absolute truth.
Right.
Okay. There are very few things that are absolute truth, and the rest we're trying to learn.
Yeah.
And so I believe in absolute truth, but here's what I found. Most of the things that I talk about are my opinion.
Hmm.
And don't state them as
as
fact or truth.
Yeah.
State them as, well, here is an opinion that I have. And that allows the conversation to continue. Here's another thought on this truth idea. When you state something as a truth, then nothing is discoverable.
Okay.
If we're having a conversation and we're wrestling over, you and I, I'll give you an example on this.
Yeah.
You and I, we run a fantasy football league together.
Yes.
You're a commissioner and I'm a commissioner. We're the co-commissioners. And we're also not doing very good this year. Well, I'm not. You're doing okay.
No, we're both pretty bad.
Yeah. But but one of the things that you and I do is we set the constitution and bylaws for our league.
Yeah.
It's pretty intense.
It's amazing. People are judging us right now, but that's okay.
Yes. And you and I get into healthy conversations.
True.
Just recently,
yeah.
About the franchise tag. Do you remember this conversation?
Barely. I think I just moved on past it.
Right.
I
was there any emotion behind this? I think I showed emotion. But here's the deal. We were stating things as absolute truth, and when the conversation shifted, let's discover together what is right. And I know what you're thinking right now. I was right the whole time. But
I wasn't thinking that, actually.
Let's discover.
Give me the benefit of the doubt.
Okay. Let's discover the truth. Now we're on a journey together.
Yeah.
And we can find it together. And now I'm interested in what you're saying, and you're interested in what I'm saying, because we're pursuing truth together. I think that's so important.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that's why I say, you know, state your opinions as opinions, not necessarily as truth, because it allows us to discover truth together. Yeah. And I think also in stating your opinion the same way, louder and louder, doesn't make it more true. You know what I'm saying on that one?
Exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, I fell at that one often.
Just listen to me.
My father-in-law was over in Africa, and he doesn't speak the language of the country that he was in. He only speaks English. And he...
say that like you speak that language. No. You're like, he doesn't speak that language.
I don't speak any... I can hardly speak English. And the missionary that he was there with kept having to tell my father-in-law, you don't have to keep saying the same thing louder and louder. It doesn't help them understand you anymore. But that's what he would do. He would talk louder and louder in English, hoping that they would understand it if he was louder.
Louder, slower.
Right. Yes. Sometimes I have done that before.
I do it all.
Oh.
You do it with your kids too.
Well, hopefully they speak the same language.
No, but they're not understanding you.
Yes, I will say it slower. That's what we do in conversations.
Yeah.
You don't agree with me? Okay. I'll say it louder so that you can agree with me.
Right.
Oh, you still don't? I will say it louder. You know, and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So I think when we're talking, as we talk about how to say things, is be careful to not say your item louder and louder. They're not going to understand it. In fact, you could do what's counterintuitive. Emphasize the things you agree on when you find them.
Yeah.
I love that you think that. You know, here for an.
Yeah.
I love that you think that. I agree with you. Mm. It means we're in this together.
And that goes to that listen to learn.
Listen to learn. And then to say, you know what? Here's some of the weaknesses of what I believe in.
Mm.
So when I attack my own opinion.
Of what you believe in.
Yes.
Okay.
It makes you more interested in what I'm saying, because it shows that I have thought about what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Here's some, when we live in denial of anything that might be wrong with us, well, those are people I'm not going to really learn a lot from, because they're not open to learning. They're opening to just stating their opinion. But if I can say, here's some of the areas I don't understand, it brings us together.
Yeah. This is the stuff I'm talking about. This is stuff I don't want to do.
I know. It takes humility.
Oh, man. In fact, discipline as well. All of it.
You just said this next point on talking can be the most powerful thing you can say in discourse.
Mm.
In fact, I think if we would say this more in our culture, it would restore relationships so often.
Okay.
And here's the phrase. It's three words. I don't know. If we would say, when someone, I don't know the answer to that.
Mm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Just recently, I was speaking a message at our church. Can I use a church illustration here?
Absolutely.
And we were speaking on how the world was created.
Mm-hmm.
And I stood in front of our church, and hot topic of among believers, you know, is the earth old? Is the earth young? Is the earth, you know, how did it come to be?
Mm-hmm.
And I presented three different views of how creation could have happened.
Yeah.
And then I said, I think the most profound thing of the entire time. And I said this, listen, here's how it happened. I don't know. More people believed me then than at any point of my preaching.
Yeah.
And they were curious what I would say next. Because if I admit what I don't know, they can trust me to speak on what I do know.
That's good.
Otherwise, I would admit I don't know.
Yeah.
There's a power in the phrase of public discourse to admit I don't know.
Just creates trust.
It creates trust.
In the conversation.
Absolutely. And I just wish we would do that more often. And what it just means is don't be absolute on things that you're not absolute on.
Mm.
You know, there's that same pursuit of truth, that heart of being curious, and it's also and the last thing here before I get to the end here is it's good to agree and to disagree and smile about it.
Okay.
So what do I mean by that? When we find things we agree on, let's celebrate it.
Yeah.
Like, we agree on this, point it out. Yeah. And if we disagree, do it with a smile.
Mm-hmm.
Like, anytime you disagree, don't say you disagree until you put a smile on your face, a genuine going, yeah. I love hearing your opinion. I disagree with how you've come to that conclusion. But tell me more of how you landed on that. It's okay to disagree with a smile.
Yeah.
When did disagreeing ever become a breaking of friendship?
Yeah.
Can't happen.
Yeah.
Can't happen.
So let me ask you a question, though, because you talked on something real quick. But when you talked about absolute truths and not stating things as absolute truths, in civil discourse, how do we do that when we are dealing with like a truth of the, like an absolute truth, like something from the Bible?
Mm, that's a good question. How do we
navigate that part of it?
I said something earlier that I think applies here, and that is this. There are absolute truths. There's just not as many absolute truths as we think we are.
Yeah.
So I'll give you a couple of them. How the world was created. I'm not going to be absolute on that.
Yeah.
We don't know. Genesis is not a book on how the earth was created. It was a book on who created the heavens and the earth. And so I think when we come absolute strong on that, I know there's people in my church that disagree with me on this, but when we become absolute on that, I think we lose the power of conversation. Or like I'm preaching here in the next few weeks, I'm going to be preaching on the flood. There's a lot of people that think the flood was the entire earth.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a lot of people who think the flood was a very local flood. Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
To me, I'm not going to draw a line in the sand on that. Yeah. I'm going to preach. Here's the message that was intended, and that is the wrath and the love and the grace of God in the midst of all that. So I think we have to slow down and go, hey, there are some things.
Now, sure.
If you ask me, Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life of salvation. I'm an absolute on that.
Yeah.
And that's something I will talk through. That doesn't mean I yell it.
Yeah.
So let's say there is an absolute that we are talking about.
Yeah.
Well, it better start with love. It better start with grace. It better start with a listening ear.
Yeah.
If you look at Jesus, who is my absolute,
yeah,
and you look at his model
of
talking with people,
mm-hmm,
he was known more as a question asker than a truth teller.
That's good.
But he always ended up telling the truth after multiple questions of being asked. He was the master at public discourse because he cared about the person that he was talking to. So I think that's a wonderful way to land on an absolute.
Yeah. All right, so how or when do we end these conversations?
So what you're asking is, how can we end this podcast real fast? Is that what you're saying?
No.
I think there's four rules to know when the discourse is coming to an end. I'll go with them very quickly here.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm personally attacked, I recognize it's coming to an end. I won't stay in a conversation when I'm personally attacked. Mm-hmm. So what I'll do is I will smile, and I will thank them for sharing their opinion, and I'm going to look for an exit strategy.
Yeah.
Because I know that we're going nowhere. Recently, I had a conversation of people who came in and met with me, and we were dealing with an issue that's been happening in our valley here, and they wanted to share their opinion with me on a couple things that I had posted on Facebook. And in the conversation, I realized that they weren't interested in hearing anything I said.
Okay.
They were only interested in communicating what they wanted to say. And I realized we're not having discourse.
Yeah.
This is a one-way conversation.
They're just talking to you.
Yeah. And so I'm not going to argue with them, and I'm not going to try to convince them of my way, because their ears were not open to hear what I wanted to say or what I wanted to say. Their mouth was only open for what they wanted to say.
Mm.
At that point, I recognized it, and I said, okay, thank you for sharing, and I moved on.
Okay.
So I think that's one of the ways to know when it's coming to them. I think another one is when no new facts are coming to the surface, and you're just spinning on the same facts over and over and over. It's time to be done.
Yeah.
That's the sign that says we need to go read more. We need to go study more. Because now you're just going to start spinning. And then what follows spinning is personal attacks.
Yeah.
So that gets point number one.
Yeah, I've been there with my wife a few times.
Yeah.
We're just, babe, we're just going in circles now.
Right, right. Sometimes I feel like I live there, and that's not good either. Number three, when I don't feel like I'm being heard, and I'm putting my best effort into listening, but I'm not being heard. That goes with that story that I just shared. And then I think also a good way to bring the discourse to an end is, hey, before we end, let's celebrate what we agreed upon.
Oh, that's good.
Let's end, because we're going to hug here,
yeah,
and we're going to be family, and we're going to have this conversation again.
Yeah.
What do we agree on? I think that's a great way to go. Yeah.
So what's our action steps? What do we do? How do we make this happen?
Well, I think number one is, as you listen to this podcast, replay conversations in your head and realize, where do I get hijacked? Where do I get off?
Yeah.
You know, where do I mess up? You know, I don't listen to learn. I'm listening to talk. Okay, take one of these tips, and the next time you have a conversation, go in and practice that. And you know who's a great person to practice with? Your children or your spouse or a good friend.
Okay.
And pick a topic and just practice with it. You get better at discourse the more you do it.
Okay.
But you have to risk.
Mm-hmm.
And I say just start practicing it.
Yeah.
Start practicing it. I think that that helps a lot.
Yeah.
I think the other thing is practice with yourself. This sounds weird, I know, but I have civil discourse in my brain with myself all the time. And so I will argue both sides of a topic.
Okay.
And I practice in my brain. I know it's weird to look inside, but I practice arguing both sides. And I have found myself before going, Kevin, you're an idiot. Oh, wait, that's not good. I'm attacking the person.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes that's a good way to learn your rhythm and to learn these things. And don't, I think the last thing to practice is, it's a risk to have civil discourse, to have to, but here's the key thing. When you go visit your family this Thanksgiving or this Christmas or whenever, know that the relationship is more important than anything you're going to talk about.
Yeah.
And so sometimes that means even though you're equipped to have civil discourse, they're not.
Wow. That's good.
Don't bring it up. The most civil thing you can do is shut up.
Yeah.
The most civil thing you can do is realize they can't have a healthy conversation.
Yeah.
And then just stay out of it. That's okay too.
Hmm.
So those are the thoughts I would have.
Well, this has been a hard, but I feel like a necessary conversation on really relearning the lost art of discourse. And,
yeah,
and Kevin, as always, honestly, I think it was a great conversation, but I'm excited for the next episode. And so why don't you give us a little teaser about what we're going to be talking about?
You know, I'm excited about where we're going next month, because I think it's our first podcast that is listener generated.
Okay.
We did a podcast a couple months ago on hitting lids, and several people wrote back going, what do we do to bust through those lids? Because our podcast was on identifying them.
Right, yeah.
But people were saying, how do you bust through them then? How do you get through those lids? So next month, we're going to talk about, we'll review on what it means to hit a lid. And then we're going to talk about, how can you set yourself up to bust through that lid to be the kind of person you want to be? I'm looking forward to it.
That's going
to
be awesome. And hey, if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. You don't want to miss an episode. We're on Spotify, Apple, Google, and Stitcher, and you can see all of those at canvas.church/lifeingear.
Hey, and if you like, you can also follow us on Instagram or Facebook and leave us some reviews or make some comments of some podcasts you'd like for us to address in the future. You can see we're listening, we're reading, and we're putting those into action. We're going to continue to post content and behind-the-scenes stuff on those platforms as well. And as always, our show notes are on there where any place you're listening to our podcast.
Well, that's all we have for you today. I'm your host, Justin Stewart, and for Kevin and myself, thank you so much for listening to the Life in Gear podcast, where truth leads to joy and adventure.
We didn't even kill each other.